The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to Kiefer and Curry. It is college football. We started college football, did we not? College football weekend one, my man, this past week, right?
And it's still going on. We're coming to you on Labor Day morning.
That's right.
There's another game tonight, and it's maybe as bizarre as any for the weekend, because 73-year-old Bill Belichick with his 24-year-old girlfriend, probably in high heels on the sideline, is now coming back. The most successful pro coach in terms of Super Bowls will be coaching the North Carolina Tar Heels tonight as they take on the TCU Horned Frogs. You can't make this stuff up.
Now, I know that I'm only going to get the truth from you. I can fact check through Kip Kiefer. I don't need to go on the internet. Am I wrong here in to say that Bill Belichick will be a new father next time this year?
Right now, that has been. I hate to use the Democrat word here, debunked.
Okay.
There was a photograph of her holding a baby recently. Mm-hmm. It was her sister's child. And that sparked, Jordan Hudson's walking around with a baby, which somebody interpreted to say,
she's not pregnant. We don't know.
It's not her baby. And she's not, as far as I know, pregnant. Okay. They've completely denied that. And right now I think that's probably the case. So somebody saw the baby thing. Somebody told somebody else. Somebody else told somebody else. And Jordan Hudson is going to have a baby.
I will not believe it until it comes out of your pie hole. How about that?
Yeah. I'm saying it's not true. I'm sure Bill, still has some artillery.
It's not to say he's not hitting that, but yeah, I'm sure he's covering it up. I mean, I don't think Bill wants to be
I know personally of a couple, my ex boss, who owns a lot of casinos in Las Vegas and property all over the country. He has he had a young wife, and at 76, when she was 38, he fathered his latest child, who's now Phil's now 89, I think. So the kid's 12 or 13.
Jeez.
And he had one other son who was 40, 45. His dad's in his 70s. A guy used to work with his son, heir to the fortune. How delighted do you think he was when he got that phone call from his dad? Guess what? You got a little brother now.
Oh my gosh. It truly a situation where the child may change the diaper of the father before the father is done changing the diaper of the son.
Absolutely.
Should be something else. All right. So we've been through the first week of college football. It's my 59th college football opening weekend I've seen. Nothing surprises me. Knee jerk. People freaking out about Alabama. Certainly with Alabama, you have every right to knee jerk because when you go back and say this hasn't happened in 45 years or this hadn't happened in 55 years, or that's not good for your head coach. It's not good at all. So we'll talk about that a little bit. We, of course, have a show called K4 Wins, which is a show where you handicap ball games and we're asked to pick ball games off the bat. A lot of people think it's early on easier to pick ball games, and I think your son would agree with that. He works the Las Vegas Sun because he does do his homework. He has seen a lot of these teams. All we know is what's coming back, what was healthy from last season. The quarterback thing has changed. Now with NIL, you really have to do some handicapping. So yeah, there are some surprises. That's why I think it's really important not to get out there and go on a limb too far. Just pick your games over the course of a season. We'll get better and better and better at it. But I did find something very, very funny. The halftime interview or the interview with a coach on the sideline is the dumbest thing that I've ever seen. It's always some good looking blonde girl or some girl looking black. And she's asking the question, hey coach. And I realize it's part of something we have to see, particularly if it used to be Nick Saban or your favorite Ryan Day or whoever, you want to know what they're thinking, particularly if it's right at the end of a half where they're really pissed off, because then sometimes you'll see them fly off. But it's the whole question. Hey, your team gave a late touchdown there. What were your thoughts on that? Yeah. I mean,
it's always
your team obviously has had the turnover bug in the first half. How can we change that in the second half? I mean, the questions are absolutely ridiculous. So we get a
quarterback absolutely sucks. So are you going to make a change?
Exactly. So we get a lot of things like it was a game of two halves, or we must win the line of scrimmage, or we must be better in the turnover battle, or we must stay ahead of the chains. There's all these coach speak phrases that come out. There's a million of them. And I was trying to think maybe if we could talk some college football, we can go any direction you want, because obviously we're going to talk a lot of college football, particularly on the starting lineup on ABC 3340 coming up this weekend from 10:30, 11 o'clock. Another game that everyone really had pitted. Everyone thought that Syracuse was going to get inside that number against Tennessee. Tennessee gets the late touchdown with about 4 minutes left. They get the back door. Yes, the door's still open. So I know that bit some people, but I wanted to take some common phrases that we hear in college football or professional football with the pros starting this weekend that you have used in your life that perhaps you've even used with your kids. You know, son, you got to win the box. You got to win the box. You got to win the battle in front of you. Don't worry about what the other students are doing, what other kids are doing. You must win your box in order to be successful in life. I want you to throw out some of the best Kipsters out there that I've ever heard and then utilize them for whatever you want in life.
Well, I mean, the biggest word that comes to my head that every head coach espouses, and I certainly preach it all the time, is and you can do it in the context of talking about facing another team, but it just in terms of life, we just can't make mistakes. Mistakes is the word that I always come back to on this, and that's always coach speak. You know, we've got to cut down on our mistakes. You know, we're making mental errors. You know, my whole premise of fatherhood basically was telling my sons, before you make any decision, before you do anything, jump into anything, take an extra half a second, take an extra beat and avoid making mistakes. I think that kind of comes from the sports background because, you know, Tony, so often in life, in sports, when you don't think something through and you make a terrible error, it comes back to bite you so badly and really determines outcomes of everything we deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Something I think I use, I had not used it till about 17 years ago, but I think there's everyone in the state of Alabama now uses it at some point. It's like it could be like in the new Webster's dictionary, trust the process.
Yes.
You know, we were all about, you know, and I'm sure someone's used that phrase, trust the process, before, but I've never heard it used like in common talk. We trust the process. Now we use a trust the process. Of course, that coming from Nick Saban, trust the process, trust the process. You have paid us to come in to tell you exactly where to stand, how to move. Now trust the process, trust what we're telling you to do. And if you do what we tell you to do, then you're going to put yourself in a position to win every single week. So trust the process. I have used that with my son a million times. Now you must trust the process. If you don't, if you got a 2-10 coach coming in, kicking your ass like we had this past weekend, I'm not sure what that process looks like for a team like that, but you must trust it.
Well, Tony, that's a great one because that's exactly, and nobody used that exact phrase yesterday. As a lot of our listeners know, I know you know, for 9 years, we've come on at 9 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, Terry Quillian and I with The Morning After, which is a show that I went to Ryan Haney, the program director at WJOX years ago, and said, you guys are really missing the boat by waiting for programming and reaction. You're running a bunch of syndicated stuff on Sunday.
Yes.
We need a local show here because people are so intertwined with these teams, particularly Alabama. Tony, yesterday when we signed on for the morning after at 9 a.m. Birmingham time after the Florida State game on Saturday, four people were already holding and we hadn't even started the show yet. We had all seven lines lit up for both 2 hours. We had, you know, the only an opportunity to get in that time. We had no guests. It was straight calls the entire time. Had no time except to react to their questions and the trust the process at its theme, because they used a different word. And this is my next response to you on this. But the fans kept saying the thing that's wrong with Alabama is this coaching staff doesn't understand the culture. Culture was used over and over. This guy from the West Coast, one guy says they bring in this tree hugging liberal from the West Coast.
Come on.
And he loosens up everything, and we've gotten away from the structure and the
culture process. Doesn't win football games, though. Culture does not win football games. Yeah, we've heard that in the same proximity with Auburn. It's not trust the culture. In Alabama, it's the culture. At Auburn, it's the fit. Does he fit? Gus Malzahn was not a good fit at Auburn. Was he a fit?
Deion Sanders. It's ridiculous that you think we should have called Deion Sanders.
He would never
have fit here at Auburn.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would have been a bad fit, bringing in Shedeur Sanders and the Heisman Trophy winner Travis Hunter. They opted for Brian Harsin instead. How did that work out, Tony?
Isn't it amazing, though, how you look at two schools and one's a fit? Because Alabama's always a fit. Gene Stallings came from Phoenix and had a losing record, but he was a fit. He was one of Bears' boys. He was good to go. We knew he was going to be successful, even if he came in with a 6-10 record. Down at Auburn, I don't know what that means. It's a fit. But certainly when you're talking about a process. But that's really interesting, because when these people, and I want to dive deeper in this because it warrants the entire show if you want to go there, because you just did 2 or 3 hours on it. What do people mean by saying they don't understand the culture? Because Kalen DeBoer's been a winner everywhere he's gone. And everyone said when he was the coach, and that's the other difference, is Alabama fans will sit there and say, yeah, he's a good coach until he loses. At Auburn, they will go to the pearly gates of hell with their coach. Well, he's our coach, so we're just going to have to ride it out. We're going to have to see what happens. And you know, thank goodness they had a win this weekend, so they're good to go. But when they say culture, what does that mean?
Yeah. Well. Okay. Here's some of the things that came out yesterday in various calls, that Saban always trusts the process, adopt the process. Saban had a rigid standard of what your behavior was 24 hours a day. People were calling yesterday talking about the players being undisciplined, and some of this is documented. Remember last year, after they lost to Vanderbilt, there was a players only meeting. And one of the biggest things one of the spokesman players came out of that meeting saying was, well, we agreed that it was important that everybody needs to start showing up on time for meetings. Yep. That is a real red flag there, because under the Saban administration, how long would you have been on the team if you were chronically late for meetings? He would have booted your ass right out the door. This coaching staff is a little bit more modern, a lot looser. Excuse people coming and going, really kind of got slovenly and lazy on enforcing. Even people are criticizing this is getting ridiculous. I'm not justifying. I'm just telling what people said. You look at DeBoer, he doesn't even look serious about his job. He comes to press conferences and wearing a tight t-shirt to show off his muscles. And he doesn't even look like a professional. People saying, one guy called identifying himself as a booster and said, you know, I've been in the team hotel and you see kids walking around with friends, people not even involved with the team, after midnight in the lobby, coming down to pick up DoorDash items at 1 o'clock in the morning. There's no curfew. There's no discipline. People are citing all that kind of stuff. And under Saban, I imagine that was locked down a lot tighter, but it's kind of a lame way to look at it. But people are really thinking now. Remember too, last year DeBoer allowed music at practices and was blasted in the stadium. There was a documented story about Jalen Milroe throwing a perfect long pass to a guy for a touchdown in a scrimmage, and he was looking to the sidelines for the next play, and DeBoer said, stop the scrimmage, went out and said, Jalen, go celebrate with your teammates. He goes, oh, I'm sorry, coach, I just was used to, you know, I was told by the last coaches that, you know, as soon as you make a play, you know, don't celebrate, start thinking about the next play. So people were bringing up all of those points yesterday to kind of say, this is why this coaching staff is failing, because they have completely thrown the system that was tried and true. Kalen DeBoer now 9-5 in his career at Alabama, has lost to 4 unranked teams. Nick Saban lost 4 games to unranked teams in 17 years. And people are freaking out, Tony.
They lost an opening game for the first time in 23 years. And the stat I heard that was unbelievable, I had to go back and look, and it came across the bottom of the screen. I was like, this cannot be right. For the first time in 45 years, Alabama's defense gave up a first possession touchdown in an opening game of a season. They had not given up.
That's amazing.
Their defense had not given up an opening possession touchdown, their defense, in 45 years. That's the kind of shit that comes out. And I remember when Gus Malzahn was losing games like this hadn't happened in 62 years, and they haven't given up 52 points since 1917. When you're going back and you're pulling stuff out of your ass from like 60, 70 years, that is a really bad look for a coaching staff. It is never good. Listen, let me throw this, because you're the one that told Jeff Spiegel at ABC 33-40 that Kalen DeBoer was going to be the head coach. He was like, who's going to be the head coach? You nailed it. You told him a week before he even took the job. Give me a percentage you can go to the 10th of a percent if you want. What's the percentage that Nick Saban is the head coach at Alabama next year?
I'd say it's...
Is it zero?
Close. I'll say 0.5, a half percent.
What if Kalen DeBoer is obviously not going to be there next year? What if he loses four? Because if he doesn't go to the playoffs this year, I don't think they're going to hold on to him. I don't. I think if he loses four games during the season, it may be during the season. I hate to say that, but it's inexcusable. People are like, you guys are spoiled. You're damn right we're spoiled. You're damn right. We expect to go to a national championship. And certainly, if they're not in the top 12 every single year, they're not doing the right job. Coach K did it every single year for 40 years. He went to the big dance. You're expected to win every stinking year. And if you can't figure it out, then maybe you need to go to Boosters to get more money. I don't know. I will say this. We're finding out who can really change and adapt the best that I've ever seen in college football, because this NIL crap and now having a $20 million payroll has changed the face of everything. It really has, because now all of a sudden you need to go out and buy some players. And if you haven't, I think that's where FSU bit Alabama's ass this weekend. They went out and spent a ton of money on some great players during this offseason.
Yep. It's so ridiculous now. One caller yesterday said, well, I don't care what it costs, because right now, supposedly, and I don't have the contract in front of me, supposedly, just like Jimbo Fisher got it a couple of years ago, Texas A&M, right now, if you got rid of Kalen DeBoer, supposedly $70 million buyout, 70 million for the guy to go away. And then, so after he says that, and we just kind of, and I said, and you're calling for $60 or $70 million to make, I mean, it's that bad where he and the guy goes, yep, whatever it costs, he's got to go. And John Saber, our producer, got in and said, well, who do you get to take his place? And he goes, you get that DeMarco Ryans from down there.
DeMarco.
Well, his name is D'Amico Ryan.
I know, but DeMarco is going to leave Houston right now on the job.
And because D'Amico was, believe me, he was given that heads up when Saban retired.
Could you imagine you talk about culture and fit. Could you imagine Deion Sanders as the head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide?
Yeah,
do you have any doubt that he would be successful at some point?
Oh, no doubt at all.
Yeah,
At a brand like that, I mean, he actually came within a one game last year of going to the college football playoffs with Colorado. Once again, back to Terry, my partner, she lived in Boulder and was a Colorado booster for years. And she'll tell you it's the hardest program to win at in the whole country, because it's Colorado's been infested with this kind of whole leftist mentality. Nobody even embraces football. It's like toxic masculinity, and it's impossible to even get boosters and support. Deion's done the impossible and won and energized Boulder, Colorado, which is amazing. And, you know, but she was furious on Friday night, looking in the stands at that stadium after all Deion's done, and he's increased the economy in Boulder by huge amounts. So it's not just a football perspective. Enrollment at Colorado's picked up since he's been there. He's infused a lot of enthusiasm in that university. But she was furious because so much of the crowd was wearing Georgia Tech stuff. Yep. People sold their the season tickets to Tech fans for big money. They sold out their team. Yep. So anyway, but the rest of that story about the 70 million, they go, yeah, pay the 70 million. Let's get rid of it. We got the money. And they said, well, who do you get? DeMarco Ryans, and he goes, well, maybe get Kirby Smart to come back. And Terry said, well, Kirby Smart's the highest paid college football coach right now in the business. And he's at his alma mater. He loves being at Georgia. He's not going to come in. Guy goes, hell, give him $20 million. So let's analyze that, Tony. Let's give this guy $70 million to go away and bring in the best coach we can. And the price there is $20 million. Yep. What's better to do as a, just an economic standpoint, if you're a job search, are you going to be more interested in failing or succeeding? Sounds to me like failing is a hell of a lot more profitable.
I think I'm going to LinkedIn and trying to find a coach there first. I really am. At some point, it doesn't make sense to spend that kind of money. What's a championship worth? A championship is not worth $100 million a year. It's not. You can win if I told you that Alabama is going to win every championship from here to the end of time, but it's going to cost you $1 billion a year. There's some Alabama fans that say, give it to me. But at some point, business, particularly now that players are being paid, this is a business. It's always been a business. And Alabama and everyone else, there are only seven teams, seven organizations, seven institutions in all of college football last year that made money. You're like, no, Georgia made money. No, they didn't. No, they made money. They didn't net money. They didn't net money. They made money. They got money back from the SEC, but they didn't come out in the black. They did not come out in the black. Only seven programs in all of football did that. And by the way, they didn't win national titles. You know, it is a game of inches. And I love the game of inches because
that's a great cliche.
I'm sitting here watching that South Carolina game. By the way, one of my winter chicken dinners, I got them going to the playoffs, and I'm watching that Lenoris Sellers touchdown pass. That's right. It was a touchdown pass. That was just a great pass that they go back and look at. It would have put them up 9 or 6 or whatever it was. I think they were up by 2. I think it was 7-5.
Would have put up
2 scores. They were giving up 7, 7.5, depending on whether you bought the half. And I'm sitting there looking and I'm going, that's a catch. It's a catch. You're going to look at it all you want and break it down frame by frame. And of course they did. And what they do, they said, nah, it's not a catch.
Yeah.
If it looks like a catch, if it smells like a duck, it looks like a duck, it's a duck. And if even if he bobbled the ball, it was still an incredible catch. If it's through the end zone, I don't give a squat. As long as his feet are down and the ball's in his hands, they're in his hands, which they were even with. And now, Kip, it used to be if it was one hand, no way. Now players are making one-handed catches. So you can firmly have possession of a football in your hand with one hand. 3 years ago, that would have been, there's no way. Well, it's only got one hand on the ball. It's impossible. Now one-handed catches are the norm. We see it almost every game. That should have been a catch. In my particular case, they end up getting the cover anyway. It was great. But when you're looking at a sport where it's so bang, bang, and we had a couple of, I think there was a couple of targeting calls too. And of course, you know, on the play, everyone was like, ooh, that didn't look good. They go back, called a target, and they came back and pulled her back and said, no, it wasn't, because there was just a grazing of the helmet, because it wasn't a pounding. It was a grazing of the helmet. So a grazing of a concussion is not as bad as a real concussion. But yeah, it could not be truer though, when you're talking about something, because baseball's not a game of inches. Soccer's not a game of inches. But football, that's a game of inches. I'll never get tired of hearing that.
Well, explain this to me. All right. If you are on the goal line and your running back gets to the goal line and extends the ball and it breaks the plane, in the next second, if a guy swats the ball out of your hand, it's still a touchdown because it broke the plane.
Absolutely.
All right. Now you're in the end zone. You're a receiver. You go up, you catch the ball, you pull it into your chest with two hands, your feet land. You have not only broken the plane, you've got your whole body.
You're in the plane. Yeah.
And then somebody knocks you to the ground and the ball comes out. The instant he touches down, that's a touchdown.
Absolutely.
If it's consistent with the, why it makes no sense. They're calling catches no good a full 3-4 seconds after the catch is made, because a guy might get knocked sideways.
And they're taking 7 minutes to tell us. Moves. Yeah, I hate that. I hate that.
It makes no sense. It's just stupid.
When everyone in the stadium outside the Hokies fans are saying, come on, can we please move on? That was just a hell of a catch. That was a hell of a deal. Even in the National Football League, they would have called that.
LSU and the Clemson game. Yeah. That kid caught the ball and touched the pylon with the ball. That's a touchdown.
Yeah, I don't know how I didn't play. You didn't play. I don't know how we could sit there and look at that and make the right call. And then all these knuckleheads in New York are sitting around TVs. And that's all they
and
do.
These are and they get reviews. Right. Yeah. I mean, if the guys on the field miss it, it's one thing.
Yeah.
But these guys back at headquarters here in Birmingham watching this, how do they come up with these are not catches? That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it started with Calvin Johnson. In a Detroit game of the first year they put the rule in. Remember, he went way up and pulled the ball down, came down with both feet, got hit after he landed. And when he fell down, the ball like shifted in his arm and they took the touchdown away. I mean, the rule makes no sense.
One thing that I think that Trent Dilfer, this is written above the locker room door. And it should be after this past weekend where they win by 10 against an FCF squad. They were favored by 20, by the way. They almost got the back door. It is one game at a time, Kip. And never more so, but I don't know if a game at a time even works for an Alabama or an Auburn at this point. I know you have to look ahead and there are games that you should win. And every year there is going to be an Appalachian story. There's going to be a North Dakota State story. There's going to be one of the stories where a team's going to come out and win. I think your son had, Tarleton State? Is it Tarleton State against
Tarleton Army? State.
Tarleton yes. State. He had that play on our K4 wins. He came out of that thing plus 14. They almost won outright against Army. I still can't. If you don't live here, you're like, don't you have the strongest military in the world? I'm like, yeah. Couldn't you blow away anything like 55 times over in the course of seconds? Yeah. Then how come your football team named Army sucks year in and year out? And so first of all, it doesn't suck all the time. But you have to remember that our big boys, they're on the field of battle. They're on the real field of battle. They're not on a football field. They're not all 350 and 400 pounds. First of all, you can't be in the Army if you weigh that much or you're that big. We don't have any 6'9 guys because you're not allowed to be in the armed forces if you're that big. But yeah, for people out there go, wait a minute, how could Army only win by 3 against Tarleton State? That's the reason. Our real guys are on the field of battle, giving peace to the rest of the United States and this entire world. They're not out playing football on Saturdays. But I do say that it's important that we take it one game at a time, particularly like the likes of UAB, where you can't afford to look ahead.
Yeah, you know, while you're letting me vent here, because I feel like I'm varying from your theme a little.
Take it, go it.
But here's what drives me crazy. We had a bunch of marquee games this week, and thank God we did, because that and some of them were bummers, but some of them were really good games. And that is 100% spawned by television, because if any of these teams had their preference, they wouldn't be playing these monster intersectional big national attention games, because you've got so much to lose in those games. And it's fine. You do get consideration later to some degree. Well, you know, they played, Clemson in the first game, or they played Ohio State in the first game, whatever. But here's what drives me crazy, Tony. Arch Manning comes out. He's the sacred cow. He's the most celebrated player to ever debut in college football. He goes in on the road and plays the defending national champion, Ohio State. And let's just call it what it is. Arch Manning looked bad. Arch Manning missed 11 receivers completely. He was hitting people in the shoe with his passes. He was throwing it 5 feet wide. Guys were wide open. But all these same experts that were hailing him as the next coming of the greatest quarterback to ever walk on the field. Last night on halftime of the Miami Notre Dame game, they had some schmuck in front of a drive-in screen showing all these details about what a fantastic job defensive coordinator Matt Patricia did to confuse the young man. This guy has been great. He wasn't reading Dick and Jane and Spot. He was reading football manuals from the time he could walk.
Yeah.
He's a Manning. He's been on the Texas campus, Tony, for 2 years before this. He's been collecting $4 million a year. He's gotten up to $6 million now. So this is not some guy who just wandered in off a farm field.
No, and all of a sudden Patricia's the Dick LeBeau of college football. Like he is the greatest defensive coordinator of all time. Yeah.
What a game plan by Patricia. Manning played terrible. He wasn't ready for that. You've been hearing me harping on this for months, and I was wrong about a lot of things on Saturday, but I was dead right about this, that Arch Manning is, if he was that great and this much of a phenom, if you were Steve Sarkisian last year, he would have been playing over your hurt quarterback, yep, Quinn Ewers, who he stuck with like crazy. I saw a lot of really interesting social media on Saturday while Arch was struggling his ass off, and that's what he did. He threw for 170 yards. He missed completely 11 throws to open receivers, and two of his 170 passing yards, 68 of them were on the last two drives. He had a 38 and a 30 yard completion, one of them for a touchdown, which was controversial too. The ball might have moved in the receiver's hands. Once again, standing in the end zone, they almost took that one away from him. But the bottom line is, this guy played private school. There's a tape on the internet today that I hadn't seen before of highlights from a high school game where Arch Manning was scrambling and ran over two or three kids that were about 50 pounds lighter than him, ran by the rest of the defense, ran like 90 yards on a broken play. And it said, this is the competition he's used to playing against. Yep. Now he's playing against Ohio State. Now, on the other side of that coin, here's what drives me crazy. I'm watching on SEC Network on Saturday night the highlights of the game. They go to the Oklahoma opener. They've got a new quarterback at Oklahoma by the name of John Mateer. He's a transfer from Washington State. He threw for a bazillion yards last year out there, threw a bunch of interceptions, but this guy airs it out, and his offensive coordinator came with him. All right, they're showing highlights. The guy on the commentary, I don't know what his name was, he goes, a sensational start tonight for John Mateer. He threw for 347 yards, three touchdowns, 30 of 37. Tony, they were playing Southern Illinois. Southern Illinois was the opponent against Oklahoma. And we're just, after we're saying Arch Manning was disappointing, we're gushing about John Mateer. And the worst one, an analyst talking about Alabama. Well, you know, it doesn't get any easier for Alabama guys because they got to go to Georgia in a couple weeks. And look, and another road game right after that at Missouri. And look how good Missouri looks sensational tonight. Come on, Tony, man. Missouri played Central Arkansas. Hoover would be a 14-point favorite over Central Arkansas. Where is people's
you have to remember something, Kip Kiefer. I'll tell you right now, football teams come out rusty because we don't know enough about football teams. Announcers do too. Announcers come out, they're trying to find themselves. They're trying to make their big dent. You know, there's so many different stinking announcers right now. Everyone wants to sound like Joe Tessitore. There's only one Joe Tessitore. There's only one Bob Costas. You know, there's some people that
let's get our Tim Brando in there.
There's only one Tim Brando. There's only one Gus. Those guys. And so everyone's saying, so if you're watching any game where it's an FCS squad against something, you're going to get a guy who's trying to make his call, trying to make his play.
So Tony, let me ask you something. If Arch Manning had opened in Austin against Sam Houston State and thrown five touchdown passes, what would the narrative be now?
That his Heisman Trophy hopes just went through the absolute roof and then he's good to go.
This is the greatest quarterback we've ever seen. You're right. How can people be so ignorant to not, you know, define what they just saw? It's just amazing to me that you can play tomato can state and run up a bunch of stats. And if you go play a legitimate opponent, you're a bum, or you're a hero if you beat up on the biggest weakling on the beach.
You're right. We said that on the show, and I specifically said, don't be surprised if you see this Ohio State Texas game and it's really ugly. The over-under was like 47, and people think it's going to be high flying. It's going to be two great offenses and quarterbacks throwing a bit. Don't be surprised if we see this every year early in the season when you see two huge teams play each other and they just feel like they're just feeling each other out the entire game. They're just trying to do that. Yeah. Clemson did that. A lot of teams is trying to find themselves, even for a club that could have been in the league, seems like 17, 18 years. He didn't look very good either. In the first half, looked fantastic. But I will say this about Texas, and this is what all the Texas Longhorn fans are saying all day long ever since this happened. Twice, they got turned over and downs inside the 10. And that's what killed you. That's what killed you. You lost by 7 points twice, one on the one and one on the nine.
That's becoming a trend for Steve Sarkisian, is it not?
It is.
The great, brilliant, innovative play caller against Ohio State last year on the half-yard line. He couldn't sneak the ball. He had to try some kind of stupid jet sweep with disastrous
results. So I look at the play calls in both the situations on fourth downs, and neither one of them would a lot of people wouldn't even have called. So particularly with a quarterback that obviously wasn't going to be lighting the world on fire. I think that's probably, you got any other things? We always win the turnover battle. I love the win a turnover battle because the turnover battle is like, no shit. I mean, if you win the turnover battle, you're going to win the football game. 9 out of 10 times, you're going to win the football game. Very rarely do you give up 5 turnovers and only get 1 back and you end up winning a football game. But I think that's kind of interesting. And I think, again, we're all trying to feel each other way, feel each other out a little bit. They always say that bettors win the first third of the season, break even the second third and lose the last third. You would think it would be just the opposite because we've got more information and more specifics to look at as well. But actually, that's what like your son does. He's excellent at doing this. He finds the lines that are off. He did fantastic this past weekend. We'll have him again on the starting lineup this next weekend. But hey, we're shaking it off, babe. We're shaking up the cobwebs a little bit. Even the announcers that don't have their shit together, they got a ways to go too. The funny thing is too, you and I grew up college football. Alabama used to be on television twice a year, 2 games a year. And then there was a PPV. Yep. A PPV was on Jefferson Pilot. So you had to pay $19.95 in order to watch Alabama play Middle Tennessee State or Southern Illinois. It was always a turd of a game.
Home games were always pay-per-view.
Now every game is on television. And so now, as opposed to 4 or 5 Tim Brandos, now we've got 173 guys who have to be employed to call football games. I'm almost wondering because during COVID, remember a lot of the guys were calling the games from studios because we couldn't have the teams actually in the stadiums and we didn't even have some stadium crowds. I'm almost wondering if we're going to get to a point where rather than have the announcers, we're just going to go ahead and show the video of the game and not even have announcers and pay these knuckleheads because some of them they don't know what they're talking about.
Because they are literally scraping the bottom of the barrel to find guys that can even halfway describe games. Because I made it a point. I wanted to see a snippet of every SEC team this week that I could. And I think I saw all but one game. It's such a different era now that you can find these games, which is, just absurd that Arkansas and Alabama A&M is actually on TV.
Well, Kip, it's not a race. It's a marathon. It's a marathon.
That's right.
So it's a long season. So, we're always playing here not to lose the game. We're always playing to be a winner, chicken dinner right here. So
got to make stops. Can't turn it over.
We got a show called K4 Wins. We're going to be live tomorrow on our YouTube channel on Tony Curry Radio also on the Coastal Digital Sports Network. It's a great show. And now on Audacity, which is one of the biggest live sports platforms out there. We're so happy to be on that. Hundreds of thousands of people listen to that. It's called K4 Wins. K4 Wins. Check us out tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock Central Time. We do that show on Tuesdays and Fridays. So Tuesdays, we'll kind of look at the week. We'll see how we did. I think we did okay in our plays.
I didn't do so well, but at least I didn't go over like a couple of our colleagues.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And they will catch hell for it too.
And the legend down in flames all on one side.
Exactly. Right while you can.
Because you're sitting pretty now. You've got a chance to sweep the board tonight.
We'll see what happens.
You will be on top of the leaderboard if you'd manage that. Because Case went out on that shaky limb that is the Alabama Crimson Tide. Jeez. And fell with
I played it. Once I got 13.5, I played it. And when they were up 7-0, of course, I was feeling good about it. And I just was like, wow.
I'm mad at myself. I've been saying all summer that I don't like any big favorite team. I don't care what brand name they are. You play a true road game in your opener. I don't like your chances against an established opponent. And I didn't have the stones to come out and say, I think Florida State can beat Alabama. But I thought all the time, this is a dangerous spot. Because Alabama fans were just so blasé, this is going to be a walkover. And I was going, dude, they were 2-10 last year, sure. But, in this era, You're going out and you're buying new pieces. And Tony, football is the ultimate team game. Everybody does their job. Florida State, I'm still convinced, last year went on that ill-fated trip to Ireland, lost as a 17-point underdog, came home in hungover condition just from travel internationally, lost their next three home games in a row, and their season was ruined because all the mercenaries they hired just basically threw up their arms that we suck, we quit. A football team has to be united and mesh, and it's you don't know if that's going to happen until you see teams. I also had the theory of the two teams that played in Ireland this past weekend, and got a lot of blowback when I said I would take both the Dakota teams and the points against Kansas State and Iowa State. Well, Iowa State blew away South Dakota, but did you see Kansas State had to score with seconds left in the game to pull out a 3-point win against 26-point underdog North Dakota. You can't travel internationally and play the very next Saturday. It's insane. Well,
they played that game first and then played Iowa State.
Yeah. They would have beat them 50-3.
All right, I'm going to throw one final question out. Don't answer it. You can answer it on our show tomorrow or on Friday or on Saturday or any other show we do. Out of Auburn, Alabama, and UAB, how many of those schools will be looking for new head coaches in 2026? Don't answer it.
Yeah, I'm going to think about it. I've got it in mind, so I will hold that off.
There's a chance it could be three. There's a chance it could be zero. We'll have it for you. Kip Kiefer, yeah, Tony Curry, the Kiefer and Curry Show.
Let me just give you a preview. I don't think it's going to be zero.
I don't think it's going to be zero either. Thank you, my man. I appreciate you.
All right, Tony, that was fun. Thank you for letting me vent.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.